All right. Welcome, everyone. This is the Refactor Podcast powered by Zip Code Wilmington. I am one of your three hosts, Chris Nobles. We've got Dan Stab and Kay Finn as well. Kay Finn is ever the star. That's why I put her name last. So you might remember the other two. We've also got Margaret Pierce, Maggie Pierce. Maggie?
Yeah, I go by Maggie usually.
All right. We go by Maggie. We got Maggie Pierce here. Today, the general topic is you, the listener, hearing about an interesting journey to get into the tech field. Maggie's got a lot to say about that, so we're going to jump right into that as best we can. So we've got Maggie Pierce here, coming from the title of cafe manager to software developer. We're going to hear a bit about that journey. But first, Maggie, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are now, where you've been? Give us a story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a native Delawarean. I've been here my whole life, and I actually did go to University of Delaware, and I got a Bachelor's of Arts in Environmental Studies, which has nothing to do with programming or anything, or being a cafe manager for that matter. So I just kind of found myself in this place of not really knowing what career I wanted, and I fell into coffee. I love coffee. Not going to lie to you, I have a cup with me right now.
So do I.
It looks like we all do, maybe. So just from that, I just got into food service. I worked as a barista. I learned a bunch about coffee. I loved that part of the job. Worked my way up to cafe manager. And I did that, I guess, for about, I'm totally blanking on, I guess, like 5 years about I did that for. And then, you know, I was looking for a change in my career, and that's what I'm here to tell you all about. And I managed to stumble and push my way from cafe manager into being a software developer. It was kind of a wild ride, but I'm really happy where I am now. It's been a great career change.
So what do you think, out of all the fields you could have chosen, and you sort of used the word stumble, did you find yourself stumbling into tech? Is this something that you had dabbled in before? Maybe talk a little bit about how you started this journey into the tech world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I never like considered myself a technical person. Like I was always the person that was very resistant to like I had my CD player. I didn't want an MP3 player. It was too much technological change for me. So when I was thinking about careers, like initially out of college and stuff, tech never occurred to me. But I do like to, I like to have like a mentally stimulating job, and I like to problem solve, which was something I did a lot, like when I was a cafe manager. And I had friends who were in tech, and that's kind of really where the introduction came from. So it was never introduced to me as like, you should become a software developer. This would be a great career for you. It was more my friends who were like programmers or even just people who loved computers and telling me how fun coding was and just how they enjoyed it like recreationally. So my very first introduction to programming was my friend telling me like, I really should try programming. And I got on, internet website that promises to teach you Java. And they do it through like you build pictures with code. And I played with that, and it was kind of fun. I didn't really get the point of it at the time, but that was my very first introduction to tech. And kind of, I think maybe one of the things that broke that barrier of me thinking like, oh, because I don't eat, sleep, and breathe computers, I can't be a programmer. I learned that, oh, like this is just, it's just a skill like any other. It's just almost like a game, how I was introduced to it. So it was just kind of stumbling really is the word. It was never intentional for me to become a programmer. It just kind of happened incrementally over time.
It's the best kind of peer pressure.
Yeah. Get into coding or else.
So coffee aficionados, I apologize if this offends you, can be pretty picky about their coffee. I've also had my code completely roasted by my colleagues for small, small things. So that might be a transferable skill, picking coffee and how to roast coffee and how to roast other people's code. What do you think is transferable between what you did and just who you are as a person and, you know, becoming a software developer? What didn't need to change? What was already there?
honestly, a whole lot was already there. And that surprised me as I got into programming and really as I settled into the job working itself, as opposed to just like being a student and learning. Probably the thing that jumps out at me the most would be like detail orientation. Like when you're working in food service and cafes, like you have to pay attention. You have to know everything is, what's the status of everything, the quality of things. You just have to have a really sharp eye. And I'm sure you guys can all attest, it's the same for code. You have to pay attention to what you're doing, but you also have to look at the code you're working in. You have to see who's been there before and, you know, what assumptions they were making. You have to kind of know how to think like other programmers, because for most people, programming isn't like an isolated task. It's, you know, so a big network of work. And the other really, really big skill that I think helped me the most was just, I could almost call it problem solving, but I could maybe also call it just stubbornness. It both in like food service and in coding, like I just had to just get it done. Like in food service, it came from like knowing how to, you know, work a long shift when the whole thing was crazy, or deal with maybe a frustrating customer or something like that. And just knowing the job needed doing and just having that determination to just like get it done and get it done well and finding that way. And in programming, it comes in a slightly different form, but it's the same attitude. It's like, wow, I don't know how to do this problem. Well, I'm still going to do it. And, you know, whether it means Googling or asking for help or just sometimes kind of banging your head against a wall for an hour or so, it's just like, yeah, problem solving and getting stuff done.
And given that you sort of, like we've said more than once, you stumbled into this, something you kind of dabbled in before you really started diving deeply into this, when was the point that you thought, oh yeah, I could totally see myself doing this as a career?
Yeah, the impetus for that change came more from deciding I was done with my food service career, because it's not a career that most people stay in for their entire lives. Some do, and that's great, but there's a point where you just get kind of tired of it or a little burned out or whatever. So I had just made the decision to change careers, but I didn't know what that change was to. So I was just exploring all these different options. And it came kind of swiftly and suddenly. I heard from a person about a boot camp. I talked to them about it and I was like, well, that could work. I've, you know, coded, you know, 10, 20 lines of code in my day. I can probably do this. So then I just decided that I was going to make an effort at this. And I told myself, I found a little online JavaScript learning program that was recommended. I said, I'm going to do this a half hour a night, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, until I'm done this little program. I was loving it. Like, it was challenging. I was having a hard time. I was frustrated, but also I was like making these leaps. Like, the concept of a loop was so difficult to me for a little bit. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, I get this. And that was like so gratifying. I really liked it. And I was like, well, this has been a great couple of weeks learning JavaScript, I guess. Why not do this for the rest of my life? So it just kind of happened from me deciding I wanted to change. And I had just dabbled in a couple different things. And this is the thing that stuck, that I was like, wow, I could stick with this, I think.
So right now you work for one of the big banks in Delaware. It's a very prestigious, I would kind of say, company that you are working at right now. And I kind of want to talk about your transition from, you know, you did this boot camp for a period of 3 months. Did you ever imagine yourself working at a company like this today in that short time period of saying, okay, you know, I'm going to change my career and, oh, this looks like fun. Okay, I'll do this really quickly. And then boom, all of a sudden, you know, you're at this this big corporation. How was that transition for you?
It was kind of wild because while I was making the transition, I didn't really look that much further ahead than like, all right, get a job. You know, like that, I needed to get a job. So that was about as far ahead as I looked. I didn't really think about like the after. I assumed it would be good. I assumed I would like it. But I didn't really envision myself working for a huge company just because I never had in the past. I always worked for smaller companies. And I didn't think about like what this big corporate structure would be like. So when I found myself there, it was a little bit of a difficult transition. I'm not going to lie. I definitely struggled through the first couple months, just kind of feeling out of place, not knowing, I guess, just how things flow in a huge company. But once I kind of settled in and, you know, I met some people and I kind of learned the rules of the road, I've really enjoyed it since. I think there's a lot of like comfort and structure in a big company. It's maybe not as romantic as like working for a little startup or something, but there's so many resources. I have access to such a huge network. It's been really beneficial to me, and I like it. And I am surprised. I never thought about like working for such a huge company before.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like they have a lot of training that goes into place in the first few months, and they make sure that they kind of guide you into where you need to be. I'm personally not at a big corporation, but my husband is, and he also did the boot camp. And we were actually concerned about him going from a startup to, you know, one of these big corporate companies, because he doesn't have a filter. And that was our biggest concern, is that he was going to say something to someone that he shouldn't, just in jest, but you know, everything he says in jest. So yeah, that was his big transition. So I mean, I know that when you did the boot camp, you know, you do get the ability to interview with some of the partners, or, you know, whichever partner you decide that you'd like to interview with. And you happen to get quite a few offers at the end of your job offers at the end of your boot camp. And I want to know where your mind was on deciding, you know, which company and what you were looking for in the company that you decided to go with, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I tried to make it like a pretty practical decision, because, you know, you're not tied to a company for your entire life, but you want to be somewhere for a little bit. You don't want to have to be job hopping around immediately, if you can avoid it. At least that was my perspective. So the biggest factor for me was really location. A couple of the offers or promising prospects for me, not that they were far away, but, you know, a 50-minute commute, something along those lines. And of course, it's all irrelevant now that I'm working from home for COVID. But at the time, I was like, well, I don't want to move if I can avoid it. You know, when I introduced myself, I said I was from Delaware. It's a really big part of my identity. I like where I am right here in the city. So that was one of the number one factors for me. And then the second factor was the teams I was interviewing with themselves, like the people, because those are your coworkers that you see every single day. So like, yes, of course, like the company and the benefits and salary and all that stuff comes into play. But I was like, I want to go into work and like the people that I deal with every day. That's important. So the team that I ended up going with at this company, I really felt like I clicked with them. I liked their ethics around, you know, how to code, how to work. They seemed to value like high quality code and programming, which I cared about, you know, especially as a beginner, you're usually something of an idealist, and I didn't want to lose that. I wanted someone that would kind of help me grow into a more mature programmer. And so those were the two big decisions, honestly, for me, just location and the people. And I'm fortunate that the people left me into this really cool network at the corporation. And I've met so many others who kind of share these programming values, and we get along, and, you know, it's been really good.
One of the things I would like to circle back to when you talked about that initial transition, and I'm also wondering if you experienced this when you were in the boot camp as well, is that whole notion of imposter syndrome, where it's that notion of, I've been found out, I'm not who they think I am, what am I doing, I don't belong here, which we know is not true cognitively, but it's hard to tell ourselves that story when you're really in it. So can you talk a little bit about, did you experience that either when you were studying or when you started to transition into your professional role? And then how did you work through some of those thoughts of again, I don't belong here.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, I've experienced imposter syndrome. I think most people who kind of make these transitions probably do. And honestly, from people I've talked to, I think a lot of programmers in general experience imposter syndrome, even if they've had a more traditional trajectory. You know, that when I very, very first started, I don't feel like I experienced it much because I didn't know anything. And I felt like, oh, they knew that when they hired me, they knew they were getting a beginner. But it did kind of appear and ramp up pretty quickly when, you know, sometimes there was just a little bit of depth in a subject that I was perfectly capable of looking up, but it's that sense that everyone else in the room already knows. And, you know, not that I'm an old woman, but I was older than the other entry-level candidates because I had already worked for a little bit. And it's like, oh my gosh, these kids fresh out of college, they not only do they know this stuff, but they seem to know this whole depth and background to it. And I think the first step to getting over that is realizing that's not true, is that most people, yeah, maybe they have some depth and background, but everyone is ignorant on some subject, particularly in programming, because it's such a vast field of knowledge. And I that's the thing I always come back to, is like, everyone has their dumb spot. Like, don't worry that you don't know this. You're building your skills. You know so much more than you did, you know, a month ago, 6 months ago, a year ago. So you're getting smarter, and everyone has like blind spots, but it's there. It's absolutely there. I feel it. Even now, I'm 2 years into working in software, and every once in a while I get hit with this. Oh my gosh. Like, I just know nothing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I will vouch for that too. I've been at my company for 3 years and we'll be in a meeting, or, you know, I'll be given a new ticket and I'll just be like, whoa, what am I doing? I have no idea. And then, you know, I feel like everyone already knows, you know, all the AWS services, they know it backwards and forwards, and I'm still learning. And imposter syndrome can be real. I think it, like you had said, Maggie, it hits everyone, even people who haven't done the boot camp. Every once in a while, you know, I'll hear it from one of my fellow programmers and they'll, you know, what am I doing? Do you know what you're doing? I don't. So it's great. I'm glad that we're not working in the medical field.
Oh my goodness.
As someone with a few friends training for the medical field, they also often feel like they don't know what they're doing. So, yeah,
it's a little scarier.
Yeah, it's a lot scarier.
It's not going to make anyone feel better, but there's a lot of exploring, even when you're doing something you're supposed to know how you're doing. And imposter syndrome it can be intense, and it is very real, because anything that can lead you to believe that kids right out of college know what they're doing must be a very intense sensation. that's deceiving. what I wanted to ask then is, you know, that's tough to go through. I certainly also, we could all say we experience imposter syndrome. I know what I'm doing about 10% of the time, so maybe I'm just comfortable with it. What is it that gets you, you know, out of bed in the morning, enthusiastic about what you do right now, especially during the tough periods? A ticket's difficult. You don't really know what you're doing. Yesterday didn't go as well. What keeps you passionate about being in this field now?
Well, like I think Kay also thinks, partially it's my coffee that gets me out of bed. But as far as getting into work and getting excited about stuff, I mean, it's kind of that same sensation I was describing when I said that, you know, learning loops and mastering that little skill was such like elation for me. It's the same feeling when I, you know, close a really hard ticket at work, or I master some new little library and I find a neat little intricacy that does just what I want it to do. You know, there's a satisfaction of just solving the puzzle, and just doing a job well done. Looking at something I've done and being like, wow, like that code looks great and it does what it's supposed to do. And if someone else has to come in here and make a change, they're going to be like, ah, this is nice code. And, you know, I don't hit that every time, but just kind of striving for that satisfaction and then getting it. That's definitely it for me. Do you guys, I mean, what makes you guys still like coding and doing that? Is it similar?
Well, I was going to ask, did you see the Perseverance landing that happened the other day?
Yeah.
It had like all the engineers at NASA that were working on it sitting there and, you know, giving us updates, and it goes into the atmosphere and then it lands and everyone like gets up and starts screaming and cheering. And my husband is like, that's a little excessive. And I was like, well, sometimes when I get my code to run, I feel like that. I want to stand up and cheer and scream. And I don't. I can now because I'm remote, but it's that feeling. So I would get the imposter syndrome every once in a while, or if I'm working on a hard ticket and I would just feel like, you know, this is it. And then eventually I get it. And it's that eventually I'm going to get it kind of feeling, like eventually I'm going to get that. I want to stand up and scream like the rover just landed, kind of feeling that keeps me going. I don't know about you guys, Chris. Look,
I would be lying to you if I said I never clapped when I got something to work that hadn't been working. That would, I would be an absolute lie.
And I think for me, because I'm not a coder, but from the outside looking in, seeing the students or seeing anybody who's doing this, like have that freak out clap moment when they get it to work, it's really cool. And this is going to sound a little cheesy, but it's infectious. Like you genuinely see their excitement, especially when Chris knows for some of the projects we do at ZipCode, I'm the project manager for it to kind of help them see through the project, and to have them come to me and just show me this one little thing that worked that didn't work 2 days ago, 3 days ago, sometimes 2 hours ago. And to see that satisfaction they get is just, I mean, and it's beyond satisfaction. It's exuberance. I can just imagine from the outside looking in, just seeing it, how absolutely amazing that has to be, and how it's, you know, I'm a performer, and so sometimes you kind of chase that rush, and then when it never gets old. I imagine it has to be the same when you're coding, is that when you'll fail, but when you nail it, when you knock it out of the park, it has to be a pretty amazing feeling.
Yeah, rush, that's a good word for it. Yeah. It is a rush to get something right like that.
So you've been doing this 2 years now? You've been working?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I actually just had my 2 year anniversary earlier this month.
Congratulations.
Yep.
Thank you.
Raise our cup of coffee to that. What would you tell Maggie from 2 years ago? So, you know, knowing what you know now, are there any things you would have done differently when you first started to pursue this? Or would you just not change a thing and just say, hey, this was my journey?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think I would tell myself that I'd still be here and enjoying it 2 years from then. You know, that I think that would be, because there was a lot of doubt just in making such a big change. Like, it's scary. It's really scary. You know, I'm making a mistake. Being unemployed for a little bit while I was in the boot camp and being like, oh my gosh, like worrying about your livelihood. It's really scary. So I think just knowing that I would get through it would have been amazing, but I don't think I would really change anything about the journey. Cause the whole thing was just a learning experience. I don't know that I would be here and be feeling good about what I was doing if I hadn't doubted and made some mistakes and that kind of thing. It was a rough process at times, but overall a really good process.
So what would you tell somebody that was in the same situation that you were prior to your bootcamp experience, you know, working retail management, which I did prior to the bootcamp as well, technically retail management. What would you tell them when they're seeking, you know, some other career, or actually a career? For me, it was a career.
Yeah.
What would you tell them that you know now? I mean, I know I try to flag down as many people as possible and just tell them to do it. But, you know, with your experience now going through it, what's your biggest takeaway that you would like to share with anyone who's considering the same?
Yeah. Not only would I like to share, but I do constantly share. I tell so many people they should go to coding bootcamp.
So do I.
I actually know four people that have now gone to coding bootcamp since I've gone. And I'm not going to like take credit for that. Some of them came to it independently. But like when I find out, I'm like, yes, this is the right decision.
A good peer pressure we're doing.
Yeah, the good peer pressure. And I always just tell them that they're capable of it. You know, if you can read, you can probably code. It might take you longer than other people, but you can do it. It's not rocket science. I think it really is just like pushing ahead and deciding that you want to do it. As soon as you feel that first rush from understanding one concept, then you can go the rest of the way, I think. And I do just tell people, like, yeah, you're capable of this. Because I think people need to hear that. And I think it's true. You don't need to be a math major or something, which is probably the preconception I had when I was starting college. Like, oh yeah, those programmers, they know all kinds of secrets that I don't. It's not a secret. And pretty much anyone's capable of it.
Yeah, I feel like it's a very intimidating field. And a lot of people feel that same way. And so, you know, it's just about getting over that preconceived idea in your head that you're not capable of doing it. I mean, I don't even have a degree. Well, I do now from my company, but I didn't have one prior to the boot camp. I did some business and things like that. But to think that, I'll get a chance to interview with these massive corporations as a software engineer is just in 3 months is just the craziest thing. But yeah, no, it's a very intimidating field. And I think that it's very important. At least I feel like it's my mission to let people know that it's something that they can achieve, you know, and to kind of break away that intimidation wall that everyone has up.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. It's so intimidating. But, you know, once you kind of show people what it really is, I think that helps open it up. And I also think that like opening up the field and getting more people with different backgrounds and skill sets like that, that's so important because I think it makes the field better. So that's something that I work hard towards. And I think Zipcode or most boot camps in general work hard towards by just making it more accessible.
How would you say your experience with being a non-traditional hire in a corporation has been, or, you know, being the female in the male dominated workplace, what's your experience been with being essentially kind of different from your colleagues?
Yeah, I always struggle with this question a little bit, and maybe I'm just an optimist or whatever, but I feel like I've had a very positive experience kind of being sometimes the odd one out. I always try to look at it as an asset, especially my having a career transition, working in a different industry before computer science. I like to think I bring a different perspective to the room. Maybe I problem solve a little bit differently. Sometimes I think it's as simple as actually missing that little base of knowledge that someone who went through a really traditional career path would be, and asking a question from my ignorance that then actually kind of illuminates the problem. So I've always felt good about it. And as far as being like the woman in the male dominated room, I have just been really fortunate. I have worked with great people. I think the company I work for is really good about making it clear that, you know, they don't tolerate discrimination, at least, you know, overtly and everything. And I haven't had any issues. I know that that's not everyone's experience. So sometimes it's a little hard for me to say that because I don't want to, you know, wash over anyone else's challenge with, you know, being a minority in the room. But for me, it's always been an asset to have a different viewpoint. And I've been really fortunate to work with people who are very open to hearing that viewpoint and not, you know, not ignoring me because I didn't have a degree in computer science or I'm the only woman at the table or anything like that.
Yeah, I'll second that. I think I was very fortunate to have the same experience. So, which I know isn't, you know, the same for a lot of other people. But, you know, being a female minority at a company, I want to say I don't really even feel a difference when I walk into a room, which, you know, kudos to the company that I'm with for being able to make me feel that way. So there are companies out there. Maggie and I agree, and we're at different companies. So it's there. It's happening. The world is changing. And, you know, some companies are on board with it.
And I'm sure this is a question that everybody gets these days. But How have you adjusted to the remote working environment? I know we're coming up on a year, which this is going to be 2 weeks and it's done. No, okay, we're at a year almost. But what are some of the adjustments you've had to make either for yourself or for your organization? And how do you feel? How do you feel you have adjusted with as much time as we've had in this current reality?
Yeah. You know, I'm an introverted person. So I think at first I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be great. I can just like hide out in my house and like have all this me time while I'm working. But of course, like it definitely has been a struggle at times. Even an introvert doesn't, oh, sometimes you want to be around people. And I actually really miss the office. But as far as adjusting, I think the biggest takeaway for me is something that I'll really bring back to the office if or when that day ever comes, is that now when I do need help with something, I have to make a conscious effort to reach out. There's not, you know, in the office, someone might see me struggling like visually and maybe stop by, or I might just be chatting and mention a problem and kind of would turn into pair coding. But that doesn't happen as easily when you're sitting alone in your house. You have to like, you know, ping someone or, you know, set up a call or something and explicitly say like, I'm struggling with this and I need help. And that was kind of a hard lesson to learn. My determination to learn things and get things done kind of turned back on me at one point during the work from home period. And it was like, wow, you want to figure this out and get it done and do your own job. But also it's not helpful to anyone if you are trying to solve problems that are over your head. You know, if you really truly don't know the answer and don't even know where to start looking, you got to ask for help. So that for me has been a challenge. I think I've gotten a lot better at it, but it's just an adjustment, and I will be very happy for the day when I can go back to the office and, you know, have a cup of coffee with someone, have an in-person meeting. I definitely miss those things.
I miss going to the Starbucks in our building, because I worked in a building with Starbucks. I never had that in my professional life before. So just those little things you take for granted and you're like, oh, I miss that. I can get Starbucks, but it's not the same when I can just go downstairs from my office and then just bring it back up. But I've also learned how much money I spent at Starbucks from the amount I have not spent at Starbucks in the past year.
You're really speaking to my heart with that answer, yeah. Maggie, because I feel like, I struggled with the same thing, and I don't consider myself an introvert at all. So, you know, it's difficult to, I think for me, being in the office was easy because, you know, I just kind of like grab on to anyone that's around if I need help. And it's very easy to strike up a conversation and just bring up what you need. And now you have to ping someone. And I've been saying a lot of like, you know, explain it to me like I'm five, which is like my favorite subreddit. Because there are certain things that I've fallen down a rabbit hole for hours, and it's not good for anyone. So you have to reach out, and that's been difficult, especially with the imposter syndrome in the back of your head and yes, all these things. So, but what I've learned is nobody is upset or thinks that it's ridiculous that you've reached out for something that they potentially could find trivial. They're happier. Everyone I've ever spoken to is happier to get you past any sort of blocker that you have, you know? And I feel the same way. If someone came to me, I wouldn't be like, they asked me about, you know, X, Y, and Z, and they should know it. It's more, oh, I'm so happy I was able to get that person past whatever was blocking them. So I've got to keep that in the back of my head. And you just like hit the nail on the head there, Maggie.
I think that's also been a learning lesson for us in the work that we do, because what we have found, because we've now had one or two cohorts under our belt that have been 100% virtual, and it's easier to see when people are struggling when you're in the same room or in the same building. And I think we were finding that we had to do a little more outreach from our end to check in with people, to see that everybody's okay, because we're all learning to cultivate the tools that you just said of, okay, I might have to take that extra step to reach out and seek help, because it's not as easy as just popping into Chris's office or going to talk to somebody else.
Or just looking out and seeing someone crying.
Right. Right. Yeah, just forming a little cry huddle. It's not as easy. And I think, you know, being on our side of things, I think it's forced us in a good way to be more active and more purposeful and more proactive to really do those check-ins and to empower folks to say, hey, it's okay to take these steps. It's okay to ask for help. And I think I noticed a difference in our most recent cohort from, because we're 12 weeks, week five, week six, when I think a lot of folks were feeling that isolation and that moment where we just were just like, yeah, we know you're feeling this and we're here. And then all of a sudden it was a light switch, I think, for everybody, the students and the staff. And that ability, I think, to take those steps, to seek help, to just, or just find that level of camaraderie. Again, I think it was like a light switch, and it was amazing how much changed just from that knowledge of, okay, I'm feeling this. I need to talk to somebody about this.
I can't even imagine. And there's also, I guess, a fine line between asking for too much help, versus asking for the right amount of help. And I remember my zip code experience. I think there was a point where our cohort started asking for too much help and they just cut off all help. But we were in person, so it was easier to understand that they were just not going to help you. You had to figure it out at some point. And that was a lesson we had to learn. So I can't imagine like the dynamic that you guys are going through, having to kind of gauge what's the right amount and what isn't, you know.
Anyone have burning final-ish questions for Maggie? Or Maggie, do you have a zinger of a send-off statement? I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you got one, now's the time.
Oh, I don't have a big zinger, but I just want to thank you guys for like doing this podcast, because when I was first starting the journey of like transitioning my career, I kept looking for like, you know, affirmation that like this was the right thing to be doing. And I found some of it. I talked to people, I read things, I listened to a podcast. But I just think the more voices out there being like, yeah, you guys can do this, like this is a doable thing and you got it, I just think that's the better. And to answer those questions that I had, and I'm sure other people have too. So I just really happy you guys invited me on, and thank you for hosting this.
And I was thank just going to say, yeah, thank you for being that voice today, because you're giving back, and for whatever you were or were not able to find that beginning part of your journey, it's really, I'm incredibly grateful that you're here talking about your experiences today, because somebody out there, I gather, is going to be inspired by this and just hearing your story. So absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. You're awesome, Maggie. Thank you so much. Inspired me today.
Oh. Thanks, guys.
I'm glad you could be here, Maggie. We appreciate all our guests. You are our first official guest, and you were an awesome pick. Next upcoming guests, Maggie has set the bar. You must perform to Maggie's level or greater. That's all we will accept. No pressure. All right. This has been the Refactor Podcast, powered by Zip Code Wilmington. One last shout out to our first official guest, Maggie Pierce. Knocked it out of the park. You might also be able to tell that this outro was recorded separately. Refactor is a brand new podcast. We still have some growing pains. In the coming months, we'll have great guests, great topics, and things will be improving as we go along. We really appreciate your support so far, this only being the second episode. We also greatly appreciate your feedback. So if there's anything you'd like to hear, any changes we could make, let us know. It is called Refactor. We intend on changing things for the better. All right, that's all for today. That's all for this month. Take it easy out there.